This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 360 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Linda Z. She is one of our co-producers on Patreon. Thank you so much, Linda Z. And we will stay tuned to the end of the show. We'll tell you a little bit more about what a co-producer is and how you can find out more or become one if you'd like. We also have a few spots left on our Pod Abroad 2021 trip. We would love to be able to welcome you. And to find out more, visit podabroad.com.
This episode is brought to you by betterhelp.com. My only announcement this week, you guys, is that Hallmark and Lifetime have a ton of Christmas movies for when you just need to not pay attention to everything else in your life. There is nonsense. And I promise you, I've had this full conversation with my partner because he hates and doesn't understand why I would want to watch Hallmark movies. And I try to explain to him that they require nothing of me. I don't even need to pay attention. They are all so full and built off of a very specific formula that I can start watching a Hallmark movie from any point, from the first moment it starts to the last 5 minutes it airs, and understand exactly what's happening. And that is why I love Hallmark movies.
Yeah, I like them. I like them. I don't have Hallmark at home, so.
Hey, you know what, though? I mean, we call them Hallmark movies and we call them Lifetime movies, but Netflix has them. Hulu has them. Literally any streaming network now has them. So you can watch them anywhere and they're all the same.
You can find a version. I would say they're not unlike or they're not dissimilar. They're not all called Hallmark, but they're along the same lines. That is true. I have found some. So I got through one. I started another one and I honestly don't know what it was called or what it was about. I did have to actually stop it because of the stupid. But
did you just say because of the stupid?
Because it was more painful. Yes.
Awful.
You're that awful. Took you a second. It was awful, I'm telling you. Anyway, I do agree with Summer 100%. You can pop in.
Which one was it? Was it Princess for Christmas?
Oh, no. No. That actually was Hallmark, I think. Summer, it was like 2 years ago. I have no idea. It just was so bad. Oh, no.
But like I said, you don't have to pay attention. They can be background noise. And they're my favorite thing to have going on in the background when I'm working from home. Because I don't have to pay attention. I can look up at any time and know exactly what's happening. And it requires no brain power from me. That's all I want. I just want noise. I want good noise that makes me feel not awful. And none of them make you feel bad. And they're so formulaic, you don't actually have to pay attention.
And the reason Summer is telling us all of this ad nauseum is because she had to clear her palate before and after reading this chapter.
For sure. Because guess what? Nobody ever gets gang raped on Hallmark Christmas movies.
Whoa. Okay. That's enough. Let's go on.
That's too much? That's not too much. Come on. Welcome to the Outlander podcast.
We need to start the chapter.
And now, on to our read-along. This week, we will be continuing our A Breath of Snow and Ashes read along with chapter 28, entitled Curses. And if you recall where we left off, this goes nowhere anyone likes.
So Claire, in the last chapter, had been abducted and they had camped for the night. This chapter opens with her waking up just before dawn. Hodgepile sees her wiggle tracks from tree to tree so that she had moved, you know, a little bit further away from the dudes. And he is not happy about this. They give her 5 minutes to get ready before they leave again. This leg of the trip, she's on a horse, but thankfully not tied. She uses her time to observe her captors. She finds Tebby, notes he is a man of mixed blood, and this already may have been noted in the last chapter, she also recognizes the young man leading her horse from the night before, the one with, quote, long, busy hair, unquote. He appeared mixed as well. So the rest of her gang of captors were mostly white, some quite young. So Claire is still only in her shift, and it is the worse for the wear, but at least it still mostly covers her. She's in the center of the crowd, and Diana sets up her description of Claire to be in line with the chapter title. Quote, I could only hope that I looked aged and crone-like enough for my state of untidiness to be repellent. My hair was loose, wild, and tangled as witch's moss around my shoulders, and I certainly felt as though I had been crumpled up like an old paper bag. Harry Bauble, the would-be thief-taker, and Lionel Brown. So, we talked about the Browns, like, earlier in the book. We talked about the Browns last episode. How long did it take you from either listening to the chapter of Divina or reading it or whatever to remember exactly who Harry Bauble was? Did you know on sight or by hearing who he was?
No, I had no, I did not remember who he was. I do know that when I hear the word Lionel Brown, he looks like what I think cat's pee smells like. Like when I think of Lionel Brown, he looks like cat pee.
Okay,
smells.
But Harry Bauble, you had no clue at first, right?
Harry Bauble, to be fair, I don't recall him ever coming up in the book. I know that you and I have never said Harry Bauble to each other. It may be my new greeting for you and me. I'll be like, Harry Bauble! And you'll be like, Harry Bauble!
I'm sure he came up during the gathering when we discussed...
I promise you, Harry Bauble did not come up in any of our discussions because I would recall your voice saying Harry Bauble. Had you ever said Harry Bauble?
I'm pretty sure I did because it was a big, well, not huge storyline, but it was kind of a big deal for the people who were involved. But anyway, so Harry Bauble was the would-be thief taker whom he was there to thief take.
Don't pose these questions to me. I do not remember Harry Bauble.
No. I'm not asking you.
Thank you.
I'm saying he came to the gathering at the big gathering. The big gathering that takes 30 chapters or whatever. The big gathering at the beginning of book 5. And Harry Bauble is there to, I want to say it was, whoo, my hand is cold and I just touched my chest. Oh, Lord. I want to say that he was there to pick up Manfred. But I could be completely wrong. I don't know. One of the McGillivrays. But right or wrong, it was Uta. So he was there at someone's bidding to pick someone up. Okay. And Uta McGillivray, the mama of Manfred, to whom Lizzie is now betrothed. Uta and her daughters, like basically, yeah, the German community there headed by Uta. And so Uta with her daughters had like picked him up and like had wound him up, had like tied him up, I think. And they were like sitting on him. So they had captured him and they eventually released him. He got a threat from Jamie and all that. So there was some back and forth. But the point is Harry Bauble definitely has it out for maybe not just Claire, because definitely the Germans, but the Germans aren't there. And so she is the one thing he would put all of his hatred and revenge on. So Harry Bauble, we have seen him, but not for a book, and Lionel Brown. So Lionel Brown won't make eye contact with her. I wonder why. He'd been hit or something. So Claire now believes it was him who'd argued with Hodgepyle against taking her. So she's remembering she heard a voice, couldn't quite place it or match it to a personage that she knew back when they were at the malting shed when some of the guys were arguing over taking her or not. And she believes he was one of the ones who had argued against Hodgepyle against taking her. As Diana writes, quote, it was one thing for freebooters like Bauble or Hodgepyle to roam the countryside, robbing and burning. quite another for the Browns of Brownsville to be providing a base for their depredations. The very last thing in the world Mr. Lionel Brown could wish would be for me to reach Jamie with word of what he had been up to. Unquote. And I wrote, too bad, so sad. So because of this, she's convinced that he'd prevent her. Well, now, so if what he had tried didn't work, and it didn't because she was taken, she's now convinced that he would do everything within his power to prevent her from being able to tell Jamie anything about his involvement.
Right, because now death is the only option, because if she's alive, she'll tell everybody. And, I mean...
To the yes.
No one thought this through. Like, everyone thought so highly of their own ability.
Of course they didn't.
They thought so highly of their own ability to get away from Fraser's Ridge quickly enough that it would not become an issue. But the minute you took Claire Fraser away from Fraser's Ridge, what do you think's going to happen? Like, there's no way this ends. How did they think this was going to end? They had to imagine that they either killed her, left her, and moved.
They would absolutely plan on killing her.
Right, but they didn't, because Hodgepyle said very specifically, she's worth more to me alive than dead. There's no ransom if she's dead.
Only because they need to get to the whiskey.
You're not... fuck the whiskey. My point is at this point in this chapter, Hodgepyle was very specifically stating, she's not worth anything to me if I kill her. So she needs to be alive for as long as I need to get away, or whatever value her life has. But the point is that they were not considering the fact that Jamie doesn't give a fuck about anything that they think is worth their lives. Like, if she's dead, he'll kill them all. If she's alive, he'll kill them all. Like, the end result is 100% the same. Even if they all didn't rape her, which not all of them did, they were all dead.
Claire begins to get impatient that Jamie hasn't found her yet. She's constantly watching her surroundings, not only for a sign of Jamie, but also for a place to run to in case of attack. So on and on they ride, and they reach the gorge at midday. So she had been there before, but still up. She had been there with Jamie before, twice, I believe. And when they get there, still no Jamie. So they are going. The plan is to swim the horses across. Lionel speaks up and says he'll take her. Like, I'll take her across. I'll make sure she doesn't get free, whatever. Tevi says, yeah, no. She knew straight up Brown would drown her and then say it was an accident. She asks Tebby if he's all right, meaning from a scuffle or whatever from the day before, and she thanks him in the way that she can. She thanks him for kind of being there with her. She can tell what Hodgepyle wanted to do. Cross the gorge, thus making anyone who had trailed them to that point lose the trail. She tells Tebby that he shouldn't go with them, that he'll die too. Now she's trying to warn Tebby about anyone who's part of this group will be revenged upon, will be killed ultimately.
Is that a term? Revenged upon?
Well, I just made that up. It's probably wrong.
It could be. I don't know.
She continues to get witchy. Quote, the water is my friend. When we go into the river, let go your hold. A water horse will rise up and carry me away. Unquote. There you go. This is my favorite Claire. Claire actually trying to be witchy is the best Claire.
Like, legit. She didn't think too deeply about this. The failure of Claire's witch, all she did was scare them more. I don't know what I would want to see less. A witch get away, or a witch get away because a giant water horse erupted from the river. Because guess what? Water horses will probably eat the people who are there. That sounds like a terrible idea.
If Brown had not popped up, she likely would have gotten away with it. That's my belief. Tebby.
I'm going to have to disagree with you there.
Yeah, you can believe whatever you want.
You're entitled to it. I am just stating that she scared the f*** out. Was it Tebby? Is that Tebby right then? Okay, because there's another character later that I don't recall his name. So She scared Tebby enough that he was like, I don't want to be responsible for you, A, getting away, nor do I want to be anywhere near you when a water horse comes out of the water. Because there's no guarantee that your little dinosaur friend isn't going to eat me in the process. And I can't blame him.
All I'm saying is this is my favorite Claire. This Claire right here, when she tries to be witchy.
The Claire trying? Okay.
Yes. And then the same Claire... This is the same Claire who tells BJR the day of his death. So in both times, she doesn't really get treated nicely. I'm not saying it always works, but she does freak people the freak out. And I wish we had more of that. Unfortunately, we can't, because we can't have her like be almost killed every other chapter. It just happens to be every 10 chapters, because Diana probably wouldn't have sold as many books if she had Claire trying to be more witchy more often. But it's my favorite Claire, I think.
I feel like she's witchy enough. I think
she is. Like, it's like once every three
books.
I know.
You enjoy these moments. I personally find them... I feel like they're not thought through. And I believe, of course,
it's Claire. Does Claire think things through?
I know. But that's my whole point, is that when she does it, I literally groan, because we all know it's not going to work. It never works. So at some point, she should learn from her quote unquote mistakes. And the mistakes that she makes is thinking that being witchy to people who think she's witchy will save her. It won't. It literally makes her even more scary to those people. The fact that they don't kill her outright is their fear of her. But
yeah,
making them
true.
More scared doesn't make them do more things for her. They just make them more scared in a way that doesn't help her.
We will never know, because as I said, Lionel Brown pops up right here. She does not have a chance to further it was working or had the potential. We never got to see this play out because Lionel Brown popped up. That's all I'm saying.
Well, to be fair, though, if it had worked, Lionel's presence wouldn't have changed anything, because Lionel left... And she technically could have followed through with that, just let's go in the water together, before Lionel fell off the cliff. When he fell off the cliff and broke all of his bones, not all of them, obviously, but broke some of his bones.
When she said that, quote, his eyes couldn't get any wider. That was poor Tevi. So she had to convince him that she wouldn't get eaten by the water horse. So that's her plan. She'd be let go, and then she would swim to freedom.
All she needed to do was convince him that he wouldn't get eaten by the water horse. Like, she needs to stop concerning herself about what other people think about her. She needs to start concerning herself with what other people are concerned about for themselves. Because I promise you, none of them care about what happens to her with the quote-unquote water horse in the river. That was none of their business. They don't care about that. They care about themselves.
She's pretty convinced that most of the band couldn't swim. So she pretends to have... Because Tebby's like, okay, let's go. So she pretends to have a burr or something on the sole of her foot. And Tebby's like, okay, no, we're not going to play that game. I will straight up carry you. And then Lionel pops up with two dudes. And he says, I'll take her. But Tebby wasn't having that, and they begin to play tug of war with Claire's arms. So they play tug of war, pull whatever, and Lionel, losing footing or something, pulling back or whatever, he falls into the gorge. But he's not yet dead. Claire is grabbed by Hodgepile, and he threatens to drop her over the cliff. He calls her, or he says, friggin' mort. And I wrote, what's a mort? I do not know what a mort is. If anybody knows what a mort is.
It's clearly Latin for death, isn't it? Mort? Like, well, morte?
I promise you, he's not popping out Latin. Come on. But yes, M-O-R-T.
That has to mean that for them.
No, why would he say friggin' mort? He's calling her a name. She's not dead or death. It makes no sense. More definite, the note played on a hunting horn signifying that an animal hunted has been killed. Yeah, no. Same thing. That's two dictionaries there. Okay. Urban Dictionary, which was which was not around in the 18th century, says anything used to describe someone who lacks sense of life, looks dumbfounded, and has only a limited ability to learn and understand. That has to be it. That has to be it. So that's what Morton means, apparently. We're going to go with that one.
Is there something interfering with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals? BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist.
You can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online.
There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in your area. The service is available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account anytime, anywhere, and send a message to your counselor.
You'll get timely and thoughtful responses, plus you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available.
BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily. Visit betterhelp.com/outlander. That's better H-E-L-P. And join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional.
In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. And as a special offer for Outlander podcast listeners, get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/outlander. So the, quote, rescue operations worked to get Lionel out of the gorge. Claire tells a disbelieving Tevi that, yes, she means to mend him. Brown had fractured his left leg in at least two places, broken his left wrist, and maybe had some crushed ribs. One of the leg fractures was a nasty compound one. She resets his bones, and she's muttering under her breath as she works, and Tevi says, "Oh, you curse him. Yes, that is a good idea." This had me. I mean, other than the fact that the overall the chapter is absolutely terrible, but what happens that I didn't laugh at. But there are moments like this that I kind of cackled. It was too good. Lionel Brown says, "Make her stop. Make her take it back."
Good luck with that, y'all.
I was like, This is too good. Brown, freaked out and trying to get away from her, momentarily forgets his injuries and then passes out from the pain when he tries to move.
Right? He's like, boop, boop.
And one of the onlookers says, "Look at that. He's dead. She's done it. She's witched him." This is the best. So this Claire didn't even try to do anything. And this is everybody else making Claire best.
Well, and that's the whole thing. They're like, "She killed him." She's like, "I didn't do anything. He did this yes, to himself. Exactly. I would love to take the credit for this, but I had nothing to do with the whatever that's happening right now."
So they put him on a stretcher and they want to be done with him. Brown says to kill her. Hodgepile actually saves her here. Then he pulls out his knife and cuts into the base of one of her fingers. And behind Hodge, Tebby stands up. She sees this. She has to keep the witchiness going. She leans toward Hodgepile and says, as she wipes her blood onto his face, "I remember. Do you remember what I said?" The bushy-haired young native, so this is not Tebby, grabbed Hodgepile's arm and saved her. Now, perhaps only saved her from losing a finger, but saved her nonetheless. And then Tebby and Co. come in. Before she can say anything else, one of Brown's nephews says, "Don't let her talk. She'll curse us all."
Right?
Enter the gag. So later that day, they continue on their way. Later that day, they make camp on the other side of the gorge. Her hands are now also tied. She'd been forced to work. She'd been forced to work along the river. She'd been forced to walk from the river. So she was not able or allowed to be on a horse. She begins to doubt Jamie going Jamie finding her at all.
I mean, and that's the thing, because when she explained how they were going in the river with the intention of coming out downriver in a way that was making it harder for people to follow, I mean, if he hasn't found them now, she's not wrong. It'll be incredibly difficult for him to find her once they pass the river, because if they come out of the river, you know, I don't know, 1,000 yards from where they went in, it will be very difficult to pick up the trail.
And this is about to be night number 2. So they build a fire. She's still gagged and bound. She makes eyeballs. Not sexy eyes. Eyeballs. At Hodgepile. Basically stares at him.
Nobody thought that. Just you, you weirdo.
I didn't think it. I was just trying to differentiate. It was not sexy eyes.
No.
And Hodgepile can't take it. He moves her to a tree and ties her to it. Ties her around the neck. Puts the noose around the tree and her neck. She is continuing her mental dissociation and also thinking of Jamie. And then there's this, which never would have given me pause before the show. Quote, "My eye caught the flicker of movement and I saw a rabbit, gray as the dusk, sitting up on its hind legs under a bush a few feet distant. Nose twitching," unquote. Now, I know the rabbit in the show was representative of Claire to Jamie, but it did make it, I definitely noticed it here and it did make me think of it.
So I did not. I don't know. I don't even recall reading about the rabbit in this chapter, but clearly. But in my remembrance of this chapter, which is mostly, to be fair, from season 5, because I don't have vivid memories of this book, really, until they happen. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, that happened. I hate the content. I hate the content of these chapters 100%. This chapter, for sure. The last chapter and this chapter, I hate a lot. I hated the next chapter a lot less than I hated this chapter. So we'll talk about that next week when we discuss chapter 29. But chapter 28... I hated almost as much as you can hate a chapter. And I hated chapter before this, whatever that was, 27? 27? I hated chapter 27.
Oh, you mean the episode I called Summer Rage Reads.
I did rage read it. I hated this one almost as much as I hated the last one, just because the last chapter reminded me of where we were going. And this chapter, I had to suffer through all of it. And I didn't get any delightful moments where we went to the 60s and had Thanksgiving, because that's what happened in the show. We had Thanksgiving where everyone sat in a delightfully 70s-esque house and ate turkey and sides while Claire had...
And they seemed relatively happy, except for Claire.
For sure. And I feel that's... And to be fair, that's how I feel about most Thanksgivings. I can feel everyone being happy to be enjoying each other's company while I secretly kind of hate it. But that's neither here nor there. I'm just stating that I hate this chapter. I hated the last chapter because I knew we were coming here. And to be fair, I enjoyed the next chapter so much more, knowing that it only took us a chapter to get there, because this chapter sucked, y'all. It sucked. I hated it. And I'm suffering through with everyone.
So she falls asleep looking at the heavens and then wakes up in full dark and hears noises in the bushes nearby. It was somewhat young boys, maybe adolescents, slightly older. We don't know exactly. Seemed like, or sounded like, they were planning on doing a dare, like they were daring each other for something, egging each other on. And then she hears one of them say, "Her legs aren't tied." And that's when she knew.
Exactly. And that's where it gets fucked, y'all.
I mean, I think it was that when she was abducted. And that's the thing. Yeah.
Here's the thing. You're not wrong. But everything takes a turn when it becomes this. Because before this, and to be fair, for show watchers, it could never be this. For show watchers who have never read the books, it could never be this, because we know what's happening. And that's why I hate that Stars jumped forward as much as they did with last season. just because I can't enjoy the read-alongs in the way that I have been because they ruined the element of surprise.
Well, it was a surprise when they did it.
And I hate... It was a surprise when they did it. And I knew... Okay, I have read all the books, okay? I know that Claire gets gang-raped by a bunch of people in a book. But I did not recall when it happened in the course of the books. And I could have happily not recalled when it happened. So that reading the books could have been organic again. But because they started airing
moving stuff up.
Sorry. Book 6 before season 6. It made it impossible for me to not know what was going to happen. And I hate that. I hate that they ruined it a little bit for me personally. Clearly that's a personal, it's a personal moment and a personal feeling, but I hate that our personal read-alongs where we get together and we talk about the books and read them was tainted by that. Like, I was not able to enjoy, quote unquote. I mean, you can't enjoy it, but I hate that I couldn't enjoy it because I knew it was happening. And until the end of the next chapter that we won't even talk about until next week, I could not get back into the book in a way that was meaningful for me personally.
So yeah, I totally understand how it, I understand what you're saying. It does not, however, cloud my read along, but I totally get what you're saying.
No, because you remember the books more than I do.
Well, yeah, that's true. Because I've read enough, pretty much a number of times.
Because you and Davina have a very sexy relationship.
What?
Where you let her talk to you every night when you sleep. Like, she talks to you into sleepy time pretty much every night. Like, you allow her to drone you into a sleepy space wherein you can sleep. And you have told me that you listen to her constantly.
Not constantly. She helps me fall asleep. And I have a sleep timer, so I might be a chapter or two, which I don't always hear.
Yeah, I can't even do that. Not even a little bit. I hate it because I need to not care about what I'm listening to when I go to bed. And I have not listened to this book enough to want to sleep to it because I'll fall asleep and it won't help me. I have been listening to The Eight.
You probably, I guarantee you heard that or read that book more than I have. So when she hears the words, her legs aren't tied, she knows that things are about to change. And she reacts to these words and she pulls up, but the rope around her neck pulls and blocks her windpipe. And then one of the boys comes out and says, "Don't worry, ma'am, I don't mean you no harm," which is, of course, what he would say, right? They tussle. He grabs her throat, forces her to stop fighting. This was gross. Quote, "I could smell the goaty reek of his excitement," unquote. He pumps away, not even knowing what he's doing. And then he ends with, "I'm really sorry, ma'am." It's not how this works, but I mean, it's how that happened. But yeah, you're not sorry. You do mean her harm. You're trash. That's what you are. Anyway, the next one who came to her wasn't one of the boys. It was Bobble. So he goes, he's definitely got, as Summer was saying, he's definitely got this, I wouldn't say chip on his shoulder, definitely wants revenge on the people who humiliated him, tied him up, all of this stuff back at the gathering more than a few years ago, I think. And the only way he's going to get any kind of revenge is this moment right here, right? That is all he sees. Even if Claire herself was not the one who did anything or said anything about it, she is representative of all of that because she was married to Jamie. So he goes on about her and Jamie and Ute and what the German family did to him. He beats her. Now, he does attempt to rape her. He that is his intent. But she angers him by trying to knee him. And when she knees him, I don't know if he falls aside or just gets angry and gets hurt. But he totally flips and he continues to beat her. And then, standing over her, he beats himself. And empties himself on her. Now that's disgusting. And before he leaves, one more time, let's give her one good headbang. He bangs her head against a tree before he leaves. And she again wonders about Jamie.
Where is he?
Exactly. So knowing that with her facial tissues swelling because of the beating, right, with inflammation, it's just a normal body reaction. She was in real danger of actually suffocating due to this rag. She turns to her side and tries to rag. It was a rag. I meant the gag. But she tries to work on this gag to dislodge it. And as she's struggling to get breath.
Oh, my God. I hate this. Ugh. Y'all, I personally, I can deal with almost any infirm in my life except for not being able to breathe through my nose. And personally, and I have literally had this conversation recently with my partner about not being able to smell through my nose or whatever. And he's like, well, just blow your nose. And I was like, that's not what's wrong with my nose. What's wrong with my nose is that the inner areas are swollen shut. So being able to blow matter out of my nose not helpful to me because it is swollen shut. And he apparently has never experienced that. So I'm just like, no, it's not that I have to blow my nose. It's that I can't blow my nose because my nose is swollen shut. And that is a personal thing that I guess I didn't realize was not a thing that everyone has experienced because it's a me thing. I don't know. I could not understand, but I personally could not understand that, right? So having snot in my nose doesn't bother me. Not being able to breathe through a very swollen, shut nasal passage is a nightmare for me. It's a nightmare. Not being able to breathe is a nightmare. I have dreams where I wake up in the middle of the night because I can't breathe through my nose. It will wake me up in the middle of the night if my nasal passage swells shut in the middle of it. So her entire experience about not being able to breathe made me breathe so hard the entire time I was reading the chapter. Like, it caused me distress. Distress. Super distress. I hope Claire never has her nose broken again because I don't know that I'll survive it.
Oh, that's funny.
It's not funny. It's horrible.
As she's struggling to get breath, someone came up to her and helped remove the gag. This person, asking her a question, says, does the name Ringo Starr mean anything to you?
Of all the stuff she needs when she's about to suffocate. Oh my gosh.
You're not wrong. It's a lot. I will just tell you this. My 12-year-old is currently obsessed with the Beatles. Obsessed. She is obsessed with the Beatles. And to be fair, for the last 4 to 5 years, I have tried to cultivate an obsession with the Beatles, which she wanted nothing to do with. And then apparently over the last like 9 months, she found it on
her own. It's because of COVID.
While I love it and I love her obsession with 60s music and the Beatles, I also kind of hate it because she didn't do it on my timetable. So I'm just like, screw you. I've been trying for years to make you like them. Like that whole movie. So when the movie Yesterday came out, which was this like strange movie about a guy who gets in a car accident, who wakes up and nobody knows who the Beatles are, but he does. And so he starts recording all the Beatles music and he becomes famous because of it. I took her to this movie and I wanted her to love it. And I'm like weeping every time Beatles music is happening. And she's just like, you're weird. And she didn't even care for it then. And then I don't know what happened in the last 8 months other than COVID. But in the last 8 months, she has been obsessed with the Beatles. And she has a personal connection for whatever reason with Ringo. And I don't know if it's because he's the unspoken Beatle or whatnot, or he's the Beatle that everyone kind of like discounts or whatever. But 100% when they talk about Ringo first, I was like, oh, Jesus, my kid.
And so all she could say, because again, she was just about out of breath and trying to like not die. Pardon me if I don't answer your question right away because I'm trying not to die. So all she can say was yes. And then he freaks out. He hugs her hard, which tightens her noose. He removes the noose.
I panicked so hard during this whole scene because every time they talk about how she couldn't breathe, I was like, I want her to breathe. And every time she says, I can't breathe, it made it harder for me. I hope nobody else experienced that when they read it. But I also feel like they probably did.
So brass tacks, right? She's like, who are you? She mentions the name Ottertooth, Robert, and later Robert Springer. He finally cuts her loose so she'll be able to tell him more. She's like, she did a few things. And she's like, I'm not doing anything more, bitch, until you cut me free. And he was just like sitting there. She's like, fine. So she mentions Robert Springer. And then she's like, now I'm done. So he cuts her loose. She tells him she came through twice because he wants to know, like, when did you come? Where did you come? How did you come? All these things. And that astonishes him. Yeah. And she confirms, yes, I came back on purpose twice on, well, the second time on purpose. And speaking of husband, you'd best, yes, on purpose. She's like, my husband's here. I was coming back to him. And she's like, speaking of husband, you'd best be gone because that husband will kill you. And he goes on about the stones or about gemstones and a Raymond. And she has to tell him, unfortunately, that Ottertooth has died. Someone yells out at him, Donner. So she has a name. He throws himself on her bodily, acting as if he's having it on with her. And once the fakes is done, he is actually aroused and stays on her. She bites his ear to get him to get off her. And he does want to chat more, as she does, but now is not the time. He's got to get back to the dudes, and he agrees not to gag her again, but he asks her to be quiet, and then says that he could tell she wasn't of this time because she didn't act very scared of men.
And they 100% said that in season 5 of Outlander on Stars.
Yep. Yep, they did. Yep, they did. So she sleeps a little bit, and then she wakes up to a man on her. The fourth man.
Yeah.
A man who had loved, and all we get about it, well, we get a little words, which I did not write down, a few words later on, but all she really describes him as, Diana, is a man who had loved his dead wife, Martha. And she did say he knew how to do it. He wasn't faking.
He did not come to completion in the folds of her thighs, which the first dude did. Martha's ex-husband, or Martha's alive husband, because clearly Martha is dead, was able to figure out where her vagina was.
Yes, he was the only one who did.
Her previous rapists did not know how to find vagina, and they just literally spent their seed in her creases.
So I'm not discounting any of what happened to her as
Look,
not
it's
counting.
It's still abuse. It's still 100% abuse, but only one dude. And that is 100% echoed by Claire in the next chapter.
Oh, abuse, 100%. So the first dude completed, but not inside. Because he was clueless. The second dude was Bobble, right? He was going to do it. He got up, beat her again, and then did himself off and spilled on her chest and maybe face.
Yeah, I missed all of that in my reading of it, and maybe that was personal because I didn't want to read
him. That was number two.
Doing anything past the rest, I did not. And to be in my own defense, even Claire said nobody else got past my inner vagine walls.
Yes,
except for Martha's husband.
Martha's Vineyard. Yes.
So knowing Martha's Vineyard, no. Knowing that Bubble did not breach her vineyard, to me, he was less important because he literally, and he beat the shit out of her. That was what I took away from Bubble's interaction. I do not recall the rest for
so
Bubble.
He was number two. Number three was Donner, who absolutely was not intending on doing anything to her. Had a moment where he might have. But she's like, look, if you want to know anything.
He pretended. Donner pretended the whole time.
he was next to her. When they heard noise at the camp or at the fire, he jumps on top of her. Yes, to pretend. He pretends to do it, right? He makes motions and groans, whatever. He pretends. But once he's done, she notices that, and he notices that he has become aroused and he won't get off her. And she's like, excuse me? And he's like, well, it's been so long since I've had a woman. And then she's like, yeah, no. And he gets off. My point is, I'm not saying he raped her. I'm saying he's a fourth dude. Third dude. And then the fourth one, of course, was, was that the fourth? No, Martha's Vineyard dude. Okay. So anyway, yes, that was the dude. And she wakes again later on to the sound of drums. The men freak out, thinking it's Indians. And she knew, however, it was the Celtic drum, the Bodhran. She knew it was Roger and Jamie, at least. And then they've circled.
I didn't even know that.
Oh, really?
I feel like you just took a leap there that wasn't necessary. My point is when it started, when I first started reading and she was talking about the drums, and it was drums, and at first I was like, oh, who's that? Because the most recent thing I've done is watch season 5 of Outlander, and there was no drums. So it did not. And to be fair, show Roger is not a Bodhran player. He's not. They've never made that a thing that he does. So when the whole thing started and they were like drums, I started thinking, oh, is it actually Native Americans, right? Or first.
So you really only have read this like once.
Ginger, I'm not a liar.
No, I didn't say you're a liar. I'm reminding myself. You literally only have read it once.
I feel like you're pretending that I'm a liar when I literally have told you multiple times I have read this book once. I've read this book once and I've seen this show.
Well, I have to be reminded of it because it's so hard for me to believe that some of the big things you don't remember. That's all.
Bottom line. When somebody talks about drums, you do not drums in the New World. You do not envision an existence in which there's a rando Scottish dude playing the fucking drums before they go in and save Claire. You just don't envision that. And I'm only stating that because I haven't read this enough to recall that. And to be fair, Roger hasn't really played the Bodhran in the show.
So as she hears the noise and she knows it's Roger, it's Jamie, Roger because of the drum. And Jamie, of course, wouldn't not go rescue her. So it's at least the two of them.
Then when she heard the Bodhran and that it was Roger, I got misty. And then I didn't even think about it until later when I think it's the next chapter. So I'm going to shut up. But I had the same feelings when we watched that episode in season 5 when Jamie said she has an oath, I kill for her. And then everyone stepped up and said, no, I kill for her and I kill for her. And everyone said they kill for her. And I was like, I forgot about this.
I can see how that, especially if you forgot about it, that it can be very, very touching.
And I feel like, I feel like it was super moving in the book, but I forgot how moving it was. And to be fair, I feel like it was moving in the series because I remember them also doing it in the series. But
so you just wait because this book has a lot more to surprise you with then.
Don't do it. Don't remind me.
I'm not going to tell you, but you just said, please, you don't. Know. You don't know because you haven't
I
read.
I don't.
It will be a surprise.
I promise I don't. Please don't.
Okay, so let's go on. We're almost done.
Okay.
Hodgepile running grabs her. And this is exactly what Summer said earlier, or reflects what Summer said earlier. He needed her as a hostage, especially now that Jamie and co are there. If there's any chance for him to get surviving anything, he needs her. She tosses with him. He eventually gets on top of her, punching her. And then just like that, he was gone. The weight of him on her, like, lifted. He was gone. And she opens her eyes to see Jamie holding him up off the ground. And he snaps his neck, as you do.
I didn't even think about that. I watched it. I listened to it. And I read it. But I didn't even think about that because, to be honest, what struck me more was the conversation that happened immediately after that.
Yes, and that's what I'm saying now. So Jamie pulls her up and says, quote, "You are alive. You are whole, Moni and Don."
Feeling over her. All right, sorry, I have a cat. Move it, Kiva. Come on.
Your cat. I'm trying to have a moment and I'm crying. Stop it.
Feeling. I know you are.
You're
me
not,
too.
You're not
feeling
crying
over
at
her
all.
To make sure what he says is true. The camp was mostly quiet now. Some are still alive, though. Some of the dudes, some of the people. They ask her if she'll have her vengeance, meaning, and they tried, I think it was, not Angus, what's his name? Arch, Bug. I think it was Arch who tries to offer her a dirk.
It was Bug. And I love that the books gave Arch Bug a moment because.
Yeah, he doesn't get much.
I don't even think about him. I barely think about him. He never does anything, especially in the series. He's just a rando old dude who shows up, who is married to Merdina.
It's very unfortunate that they have not belittled them, but they have sidelined the bugs in the series. And even if they're given a slightly different role going forward, it's not the same. And they had to make room for stuff. I get it. It's not worth really chatting about or, you know, complaining about, but it is completely, the bugs are completely different. And that is something I mourn because they are great characters.
But if it weren't for moments like this, they wouldn't be great characters. We don't get a lot of moments like this, especially when they don't highlight them in TV series. So when you have books where they have these moments where Arch Bug is like a fat ass who shows up and saves her, protects her, and is just like, we have people. What should we do? Would you like your vengeance? And then Jamie shows up and he goes, she has an oath. She won't. And then Roger. And then Ian. And then Fergus. Like, it's awful. I hate it. I hate that I care. But those moments mattered in this chapter. They mattered in this chapter.
But Jamie says, there is an oath upon her. She may not kill, save it is for mercy or her life. It is myself who kills for her. And I, said Ian. And Fergus was there as well. So yes, all of her men step up.
And you know Roger did too.
When trying to find out who did what and how many, she responds, she doesn't know. It was dark. Then Jamie turns to Fergus and says, kill them all. And they do. Dawn had now broken, and she thinks of being neck deep in hot water. That would be the best feeling to have.
Join us next week when we discuss chapter 29 entitled Perfectly Fine. And if you'd like to join us to continue the conversation while we wait for next week, go to www.outlanderpod.com/group.
And again, a very special thanks to this episode's co-producer, Linda Z. To find out more about how you can support us on Patreon and what a co-producer is, visit patreon.com/outlanderpod.
And if you're interested and don't already have my art on your face, please go to www.outlanderpod.com/shop.
Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.